From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for June 5th, 2020. Let's start with a fun factoid. We put a man on the moon before we put wheels on luggage. I guess going to the moon was easier. Okay, recently a Romanian shoe cobbler was allowed to reopen his shop, but he was in danger of having to close it again because his customers weren't keeping their social distance. His solution was pure genius. He made multiple pairs of shoes, size 75. Customers had to wear them while they were in line. I bet they must have felt like clowns. In Fort Myers, Florida, a 250-pound black bear had been eluding authorities for a few weeks. Apparently, they weren't using the right bait. Well, a cop came up with a bait that the bear couldn't resist, jelly donuts. So before releasing him in the woods, they named him Duncan. And here's a real head-scratcher along with other body parts. In the middle of the pandemic, Swiss politicians have decided that sex workers can get back to business. Meanwhile, sports involving close physical contact, such as judo, boxing, and wrestling, remain prohibited. Apparently, they do it differently in Switzerland. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Steve Giles, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Great week. Third week in a row, the markets are up more than 3% each week. NASDAQ tacked on 3.4% this week, adding 324 points to close at 98.14. There's a record. S&P 500 up 4.9% for the week, tacking on 150 points to close at 31.94. Dow Jones Industrial Average added 1,728 points this week, rising 6.8%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 27,111. Year to date, Dow is down 3.9, S&P 500 down just 0.3% now, and the NASDAQ up a whopping 9.9%. You know, Kyle, let's start with you. The markets in the middle of the week really clearly favored the energy stocks, the financials, the industrials, stock sectors that it absolutely lagged and showed some of the largest losses through the end of March. It really led the markets this week. We talked last week about the breadth of the market widening. We saw further evidence of that this week. Kyle, I'm encouraged by that. You know, you need more participants, more stocks going up, and the laggards coming out of the weeds, I think clearly was a good sign.
I completely agree with you there, Bob. And let's look at some of the data. Let's look at kind of how we got here. I think the reality is a lot of the early rally took place in healthcare names. It took place in technology. It took place in discretionary stocks that, you know, were pretty well positioned going in. A number of them, actually benefited from the pandemic in certain ways. And then, they're going to come out of this pretty clean. But the companies that, you know, were hurt, you look at the industrials, you look at financials, they had taken their time rallying. And so we reached a point where the NASDAQ had turned positive, but the other indexes were still negative. We reached a point where even as of June 2nd, so this week, you had nearly positive numbers on, you know, broad market indexes, at least the S&P 500. And yet you still had 73% of the Wilshire 5000 index trading in negative territory for the year. And so how you can have almost positive numbers or at least flat numbers for an index and still have, you know, three quarters of the stocks, you know, broadly in the US with negative numbers, it's because really I think a lot of the early gains came from just a few places, as we've talked about. And so, you know, I'm encouraged that we've seen that continue to shift a little bit. I think it does bode well for investors who have been waiting for value stocks, who have been waiting for maybe some of the more defensive parts of the market to come back, some signs that, yeah, okay, volatility absolutely can remain, but we're finally starting to see, some of the traditional value sectors do what we thought they'd do.
Joel, let's jump right into the Labor Department report that came out this morning. Clearly, since stock prices higher, markets got pretty excited about the unemployment rate going down. Dow up, of course, 829 points today. The number of Americans drawing unemployment benefits rose to 21 million. However, the pace of the increase has slowed. And then the Labor Department comes out and tells us that the unemployment rate fell and the markets just took off from there.
Yeah, Bob, thank goodness that the numbers that we got weren't the numbers that analysts were predicting, because it was a real change. The analysts were expecting, you know, another month of job losses of like 7.5 million. We ended up with a 2.5 million gain for May. They were expecting unemployment rate to go to 20%, which would be like, you know, depression era. It was 14.7% in April, which was the highest in modern measurement since the end of World War II. But instead, the unemployment rate went to 13.3%. So, you know, it's 1 month of data, and they're updating this stuff all the time. And, you know, you never feel confident of all the numbers and what they say until, you know, a long time afterward. But if nothing else, I mean, this is suggesting that we're going in the right direction. You know, maybe a lot of the dramatic, you know, fallout that we saw from, you know, the shelter-in-place stuff in March, beginning in March, maybe a lot of the repercussions of that bottomed out in April, and you know, we saw with the May employment numbers, at least, that it looks like things are getting a little better.
You know, the Labor Department did caution this morning that the data collection issues continued to plague the agency to not put a lot of strength in the numbers. And Wall Street basically ignored that caution and took stock prices higher. Hey, Steve, many analysts now are arguing that the stock market rally has gotten ahead of itself, and they're forecasting a pullback, enormous social unrest that we've seen since George Floyd died. U.S.-China tensions aren't getting any better. Possibility of a second wave of infection. And I think the big question for me is, what happens when the stimulus spending runs out? What's your advice to clients now that are potentially worried about a pullback?
Well, I think it's important to always take things into context, Bob. And as Joel just pointed out, that maybe some of the worst economic indicators for us happened last month and bottomed out, we still got a long way to go. And as much as you look at some of these numbers that analysts are forecasting for earnings as we close out the year, you've got a 25% decline in third quarter earnings, a 12% decline in fourth quarter earnings. So we're certainly not out of the woods yet. There are also some things I think worth pointing out that might be helping to propel these numbers more than they necessarily should be. Obviously, we all saw the dollar rally, or not rally, but fall over the last few weeks, which has helped to cause the markets to rally somewhat. We all know that a falling dollar is good for our exports, and that's going to make some of our products, as manufacturing comes back online, more enticing for foreign investors.
Well, and Steve, I think we need to draw a distinction between what's going on in the economy and what's going on in markets. When you look at, you know, I think broadly speaking, the impact of the labor markets as kind of the key driver of what happens in the economy. But the reality is that the areas of the market that have done so well are not as critical to U.S. employment. And so, you know, you look at high technology stocks, they're about 20% of the U.S. gross domestic product, but they're only 10% of the employment. And so the flip kind of that is, if we see this success in so many stocks, it's not necessarily going to be immediately reflected in the economy. The opposite may be true, that the economy can deteriorate even a little bit more from here, but the technology stocks themselves aren't going to add to the labor market short term, because they've hired as many people as they need to hire. And until you see industry, until you see some other areas start to pick back up, Then I think you see more broadly the economic data start to pick up. You see some of the other areas of the market. And I think we've seen that again in returns this year and kind of the differences between the growth and value side. And hopefully this week, seeing better labor data is a sign that some of those other areas might get some tailwinds as well.
Yeah, and to add that too, I think that consumers are more inclined, at least as they tiptoe back out into the real world, to go shopping as opposed to eating out. That certainly helps the big retailers. It helps the big, it helps the Wall Street names, but it's not going to help the mom and pops that are running their own restaurants. They still need to make money so that they can get out and shop again. We all know that 70% of GDP does come from consumer spending, and we're all kind of in this together at the end of the day.
Art, I think it's becoming a little clearer that the U.S. economy didn't back bottom out late April, early May. The question now, of course, is the pace of the recovery. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Bob, I think the market this week is celebrating the fact that, as you've indicated, things weren't as bad as anticipated in those labor numbers. And I think it's this concept we've talked about, what's the shape of the recovery going to be? I think what's most important, though, is what lies even further ahead. And one of the comments you made recently when we all got together in our weekly meeting was you talked about earnings, corporate profits. And we talk about price earnings multiples. If we look at what's going to be coming out, the numbers are going to be terrible. They're going to continue to be terrible for a while. But the market, the comment you made was it's ridiculous that the market's obsessed on a 12-month picture of corporate profits going forward, when we know that just beyond that lies significant increases in corporate profits. And so I think what the market's reacting to, and the reason it's going up so well this week, and it has been going up so well since the bottom, shockingly only two and a half months ago, is the fact that we're going to get through this. It's the confidence that we're starting to rebuild in the American consumer. And I think that's what's going to drive stocks, higher, the profits we should anticipate as things get back to normal. So it's like the market saying, forget about all the bad news. Good news today is things weren't as bad as expected. Still bad. But I think the optimism out there, not to mention some extra stimulus from Europe this week, a few trillion more added to the huge amounts of stimulus this country's provided to get the economy going. I think that's going to help tremendously going forward.
Art, to underscore your comments, the Wall Street Journal survey of economists published this week forecast the U.S. economy to shrink about 6.6% this year and potentially grow 5% next year, which I thought fairly impressive. Kyle, that dovetails into your estimates of the S&P earning $163 next year, give or take what the S&P earned last year. Talking about a per share earnings number suggesting a recovery within 2 years.
Yeah, Bob, I think we look at the earnings piece, and one of the challenges, of course, is looking beyond the current environment to say what's the catalyst to get back to last year's earnings. Just from a from a pure dollar perspective. The good news is even a little bit of positivity makes earnings look like they're growing pretty substantially given how far they fell off in the second quarter. So when we start to look at first quarter, second quarter, third quarter next year, the comparisons are a lot easier. And so we're going to be talking about earnings growth that even in a pretty adequate environment looks like it's low double digits. And then if you, really get an economy that's accelerating again, like we think might happen if we get a little more confident on this virus, all of a sudden you're talking, as you said, about those numbers getting back to where they were in 2019, on the heels of what had been a pretty good earnings year the year before. And so, I like to look at earnings over longer periods of time to try to smooth the line a little bit about, there's going to be a lot of noise quarter to quarter, clearly, but there's also a lot of noise year to year. And if you look at rolling 5-year, rolling 10-year periods of earnings growth, you start to get a better picture of what direction we're headed as investors. You start to get a better picture that, over time, stocks and earnings tend to look pretty similar in terms of their rates of growth. And that tends to fall, somewhere in the high single digits. And so if we can get back to that on a rolling basis, I think investors are going to be pretty happy with what that means for stock prices.
Steve, I was really encouraged to see high yield spreads come way down recently to just 5.5%, almost normal. high yield spreads had been almost 10% in March. That's a really encouraging sign to me.
Yeah, it is. You know, there is, of course, still that concern. We're going to see a number of defaults, Bob, but the spreads on the high yield coming down gives us a little bit of optimism as we turn the corner here into summer. Of course, with the yield curve as flat as it is, even with this uptick in the 10-year Treasury, I still think that when investors are weighing the difference between hanging out in bonds and maybe getting 0.9 or 1% on a 10-year and looking at the dividend yield on stocks, even though we've come through a pretty bad couple of months from a volatility standpoint, investors recognize that if they have the time horizon longer term, that stock dividend yield relative to the bond interest rate yield might be enticing them to push up stock prices. I'm not necessarily sure, though, I'd want to engage high yield junk bonds full speed at this point. But the fact that those spreads have narrowed is certainly a positive moving forward.
And Steve, Joel, let's be honest. Oh, I was just going to say, let's be honest. There are some technical forces at play there when you look at what the Fed has done to step into the corporate bond market. And so, you know, I don't think we can understate the impact that the Fed's backstop has had on, you know, high yield spreads. The idea that the Fed can come in and buy that debt is certainly going to make investors more willing to hold it. And so, you know, I think that's going to be around for a while. That certainly is, you know, cause for, I think, at least a little bit of enthusiasm there. But I'm with you. I think there's lots of reasons why high yield isn't the right place to be right now. And in large part, a good chunk of that is because a lot of the really juicy yields we got even a month ago just aren't there anymore. And so the stuff that is paying good income for a reason, because it might not be around for a while. And the rest of it, the stuff that isn't, I think, you know, you probably want to stick in the higher quality, stay away from that lower quality stuff.
You know, Kyle, I think just the recovery in oil prices this last month had a whole lot to do with the narrowing spreads and the high yield. Is, I'm sure you know, oil at the end of April, $19 a barrel, at the end of May, $35 a barrel. The way I do math, that's an 88% increase in the price of West Texas Intermediate in 30 days. Yeah, I get it, still down 40% for the year. But that's a huge increase in the price of a barrel of oil in 1 month. And folks, the reason why this matters to high yield, half all high yield issued last 10 years went to the frackers. And the 88% increase in oil, I think, left a lot of bankers off the hook, at least temporarily, in the oil patch. So that's certainly good news. Kyle, let's talk a little bit about Congressional Budget Office the other day came out and said could take almost 10 years to get back to where we were last year. They were looking at GDP numbers of almost 3%. They thought going to take a while to get there. It's so hard to forecast now. I'm really looking forward to the Federal Reserve. They come out with their first economic forecast next week. The last one we had was pre-virus in December. So all eyes are going to be on what the Federal Reserve Open Market Policy Committee talks about in their forecast. They tend to be fairly accurate.
And I think if we look at the labor market report today, we see just how good some of these forecasts have been, unfortunately. But the reality is there's just so much noise out there right now that it's been really tough to plot a path forward. The nice thing about the Fed and some of the other, you know, I think forecasts that come out is that, you know, the data they have access to is immense. The ability to, I think, sift through that data also is pretty immense. And then you look at the research that they've put out over the years, you know, they absolutely have teams that are dealing with, you know, what does the economy look like post-pandemic? What is the economy capable of post-pandemic if we've put all these people out of work and are now bringing them all back? And so, you know, I think I put a little more faith in what the Fed will have to say when they come out with that economic forecast, simply because they've thought through more than just, well, what do the next 6 months look like, but really thought through what are the implications of all of the technological innovations that have come from this? What are the implications of, you know, all of the labor force shifts that have come from this? And so, you know, I think it'll be one of the more interesting pieces we get, I think, near term, certainly in the absence of, you know, any real good earnings data coming out until kind of the end of this quarter, in the absence of any other real meaningful economic data that's going to, I think, change drastically from where we are now. You know, I think we're pretty locked into where the economy is right now. I think the reality is what the Fed has to say is going to be pretty meaningful for kind of how we view the next 5 to 10 years.
Might be out on a limb on this one, but I think we've seen the worst. Appears to me from all the indications that the worst occurred late April, early May. And now, of course, the focus is going to be on the pace of the recovery as we try to figure out how best to invest people's money. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.